Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign with crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded Wednesday, November the 21st. China is back in the market for soybeans, and the weather is much better in South America. Oh, and then there's that nagging fiscal cliff. We'll try to touch each of these today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Lockie Stevens from Lockstock Consulting in Victoria, Australia. Our panelists in studio today include Bill Gentry of Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana, Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing from Champaign, Illinois, and Jackie Vakes of Stewart Peterson, also from Champaign, Illinois. Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. You can always find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at ADM.com/FarmerView.
Well, let's open today's discussion with this question. Jackie Vakes, it feels as if the market has reached a point at which it's, well, just waiting. The question is, for what? Do you have a short list of key terms that might make the move in a marketplace, technical or fundamental?
Well, I think when you look at the big one, of course, it's going to be option expiration on Friday. The heaviest amount of open interest is sitting right at 750 on corn. So it'll be interesting to see if we can get back to that level. We made 747 today. When you look at the low volatility, you know, is something that when you look at traditional funds, when it comes to buying, often are looking for lower volatility. And volatility has just been kind of falling down. So I expect that that's going to be something. Fiscal cliff, of course, you talked about it a little bit. That certainly has a big impact as to their attitude. And end of the month coming next week.
And Bill Mayer?
Yeah, I guess I'd say three things. I think exports on corn, especially in wheat, we need to start seeing some export sales pick up. We've been seeing that the prices are a little bit more competitive globally, but we really haven't made any sales. I think basis levels, I think that's a factor. If we can see them move and get a little bit stronger, they are strong, but stronger, that kind of shows that maybe the cash grain situation's tightening up a little bit more. And I think the economy, Jackie mentioned, if we get some kind of a good feeling or target or something done as far as this fiscal cliff is concerned.
And to Bill Gentry.
Right along with the option expiration on Friday, the 50-day moving average is right above the lead month or the December corn contract. Convincing close above that would be pretty encouraging, maybe open up the spot for some higher prices. Along the same line, beans are pretty darn oversold still. The 200-day moving average is still quite a ways above us, and I think the market's got a shot at maybe trying to get up there and test that.
Bill Mayer, you mentioned the fact that you thought basis needed to help this marketplace out. Will it have to lead the market, do you think, this winter?
Well, I don't know if it has to lead or not, because I guess I really think right now the exports might be the thing. And if we can get some export sales, so we see some competition against the domestic market, I think that may lead to tighter basis levels. But I guess all in all, I think that'll be a sign, definitely, if we see the basis. So, yes, I guess maybe the answer to that question is I think it probably is the one that's going to have to lead.
Bill's suggesting that we need to export sales. On the flip side of that, Bill Gentry, we've got the Mississippi River that from St. Louis to Cairo is really...
It's going to be tough sledding. They have talked about maybe opening up a couple of tributaries to get a little bit more water flow in there and doing some dredging and trying to get rid of some of the big rocks that are in the way. But when a market gets hungry, the basis level gets firm, we could find some alternate modes of transportation to fill some short-term voids.
Rail and the Ohio River?
That's certainly what they're talking about. Closing the Mississippi is a big thing because at this point in time, we're well over a buck at the Gulf just for beans. And if you start to have to add on, the cost of rail is more than barging. The cost of trucking is much higher than barging. And so I think, initially what we're seeing is strong basis at this point in time almost everywhere just because they're trying to get as much grain as they can before they decide to close the river. And then if they once close the river, we'll probably see a weakening in basis from the standpoint that it's just going to cost that much more to get it to wherever you want it to be.
On Wednesday afternoon, Bill, when we talked with the Andersons, they told us and reminded us that there was an ethanol plant north of them that had closed at this point. Do you suspect that there will be more ethanol plants having problems yet? And I guess I'm looking at the amount of grain that is available. You need the export market to start moving things around. We have a low river system that might cause problems there.
I think you could see that. I mean, I think you are going to continue to see some close down, some start to, come back online. But when you look at the overall picture, I mean, if I look at the weekly and the daily ethanol grind, I mean, we're right on that pace so far to end up with that $4.5 billion, which is what the USDA says. So I guess I'm still pretty optimistic, but I think the key is in the energy side, and we can't have crude oil fall way off, which Mideast situation kept that from happening this week.
And I think one of the things to keep in the back of our mind is on these export expectations, we're looking for a number that's probably the lowest we've seen since 1985. When you're that low, it probably doesn't take a whole lot to make the number that the USDA is projecting.
Where would it go?
As far as?
Who would be importing?
Well, Japan's obviously going to come back to us at some point in time, and Mexico could probably get some more business from us.
Does aflatoxin create a problem?
It does. I think a lot of the ground piles that we've seen around the countryside have already been blended off to take care of some of that problem, and it will continue to be a problem for the livestock guys.
Well, I think aflatoxin is a big problem in the export market. It not only takes exports. There's more handling involved. There's all of the different levels you can feed, and it has really cut into any kind of corn gluten exports that were being shipped out of our area, and that's cut into the dairy business. I mean, there are so many things that I agree with Bill. I think that you're going to see some guys close up. People who haven't bought out far enough are certainly in trouble. There's no question about that.
I do think aflatoxin is a logistical problem. But, I mean, talking about exports and who's going to buy, China's about 15% above last year on their imports so far. So I think that's a possibility, too.
Well, and the other thing, too, when you look at the export number, it's always interesting to see how it's interpreted. When you looked at exports last year, we had extremely aggressive exports coming out of China. We had strong, strong corn exports. So anytime you compare them to last year, they're going to look crummy. It's the same thing that we saw in the hog exports. When you looked at October, November, we already had on the books about 37% of our exports. So is that terrible? No, but that's all we hear about.
Bill, we talk about the bin doors being closed. The question, I suppose, at this point, is there anything behind those bin doors that's owned by the farmer?
I think we get a little bit looking out our back door here in central Illinois, because in this part of the country, I don't think there is a lot behind the bin doors. But I think we've got corn stored across the country. Minnesota had an excellent crop. There are some good areas around the country, and I think there's some stored corn. I mean, there is some stored corn in central Illinois even. But percentage of on-farm versus off-farm is probably a lot lower on-farm this year than what it was in most years.
In the United States, corn as a whole is just out of position for end users in most places. I think farmers in our part of the world think that might mean that basis pops here, and I don't know whether that's truly the case or not.
Expecting a basis pop short term is something that we're watching for. If it shows up, great, it gives us the answer. But I think more importantly, we're waiting for the quarterly grain stocks in January to get that broad view of both commercial and on-farm storage to see what that number is.
When I think if you're living in this part of the world, the only way you're going to get a good basis pop is if you call up somebody who's a buyer and say, I've got really good quality corn. Because then I think you've got a chance, but to expect it to really pop right here, I don't think is good. Same thing in when you go out into Indiana. Indiana had terrible aflatoxin problems. Part of Missouri had bad problems. You know, it's just it's more widespread than what I think. Especially when you hear Decatur hauling corn in from northern Illinois, you know, a buck a bushel to get it down here on truck. All of those types of things are going on. Cargill's been bringing corn down from other places. So when you say it's out of position, you're exactly right. Minnesota can have a great crop. What does it cost to get it here is the question.
If, and I want to follow up with you, Jackie, and everybody else too, and maybe we'll start here, Bill Mayer, with you on this one. If you have good corn, do you want to let your end user know that it's there now or not?
Yeah, I think if you got good quality corn and you're pretty well assured that there is no aflatoxin problem in it, I think it's got some value. I think there's no doubt about that. And I think you probably do want to let your normal buyer or your end user, those around you, know that you have some quality corn out there.
And once you've done that, how do you make the decision when to sell it? Because they're going to call.
Well, I mean, I guess that depends on your current situation, what you've sold so far, all that stuff. I think that, as in most years that we've had recently here, putting some numbers out in front of a buyer, and even though they may seem like they're out of reach at this point, is probably not a bad idea to say, you know, if I could get up to this level, I think there's nothing wrong with doing that if you're willing to sell at that level.
I think at this point it might be partly your financial needs, but more importantly, kind of watch the read of the, just like the marketplace and like the buyers. If they come back with an immediate bid of a sense of urgency, then you probably back away just a little bit and say, you know, I might offer you some here, but I'm going to hold on for a while. And I think also going after the window of opportunity potentially after the quarterly grain stocks to the March expiration in futures, the market may have a very different profile in that window versus what it has right now.
What was the biggest news in the soy complex for you this week?
Oh, well, I suppose, you know, one of the bigger ones was today again when we saw China in there buying. No question about that. The fact that China's not going to sell out of its reserves would be another big one. The Argentine strike that lasted a whole day, you know, that was a big one that gave us a bounce in the marketplace. Those would probably be the three main ones that I see.
Bill, did it make much difference that they bought products as well as whole soybeans?
You know, I was looking at some stuff this afternoon, and they are actually they've actually increased their exports of soybean meal. And, yes, I think that's kind of telling us that we've been exporting meal here, and we have kind of built a little bit of a surplus of oil. And I think that's, you know, a little bit of a concern maybe from a soybean complex standpoint.
Yeah. And I would say, too, that the trade in general has always assumed that the meal was the leader for the soybean complex, but I think you've got some rising issues under the market for the soybean oil, both for human consumption and for commercial uses. So I think that's something we're going to have to – that bears watching going forward.
What are the issues in specifically watching?
Well, biodiesel and the blending of the vegetable oils for fuel, and that's kind of going to be a rising issue against the ethanol market or the corn market as well.
Yeah, in the coming years.
Yes.
So by the time we get to 2014. It may be a very big deal. We'll need a whole lot more vegetable oil, wherever it comes from, in order to meet the RFS standards. Producers in the area have more beans than they thought they might have. Are they sold up at this point, or do they have extra product to get rid of?
I think they're finding a few more bushels, but as far as being sold up, probably not. I think a lot of guys saw the $2.50, $3 break in bean prices. They're using their bins as a storage device for a better price. The basis is starting to wake up. I think our local basis has worked into 10 over, so I think they're waiting for a better basis and a better bounce in the futures.
With South America looming, is that the right thing to do? Waiting, that is?
Well, we've got a long ways to go in South America. We've got a, you know, half billion bushel more than 2 years ago and a billion bushel more than last year plugged into our projections by the USDA. And, you know, maybe we may go through the year and not have any problems in South America, but I guess I'm willing to see if we maybe get some perceptions at least of some problems down there.
Well, it's true. And when you roll back the years, on average, South America loses about 15% of its bean crop every single year to weather problems. So, you know, the big numbers that we have right now may not end up being as big a number as what we're all worried about. As far as whether to hold beans, I've told a lot of guys, I think that with good basis levels like we have right now, it doesn't hurt to make a sale. You can always re-own it. And the other big key, and I think that's for corn and beans both, is you better know who you have any product DP'd with and whether or not their financial stability is strong. There's plenty of guys, especially in the areas that had aflatoxin. If they didn't test for aflatoxin, I wouldn't let a penny sit there.
You're listening to Commodity Week. This edition happened to be recorded on Wednesday. That's November the 21st, so that we could all enjoy a bit of a holiday with our families over Thanksgiving. The markets are, of course, open on Friday for just a short session, and we'll trade from 9:30 to noon Central Time. Our panelists in studio today include Bill Gentry of Risk Management Commodities, Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing, and Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson. In just a couple of minutes, Lockie Stevens of Lockstock Consulting out of Australia will join us to take up the wheat market and others.
I'm meteorologist Ed Kieser with a look at the weather for corn and soybean production in South America. Planting of corn and soybeans in Argentina remains about 15 percentage points behind last year's pace after extremely wet weather in September and October. The first half of this month has been drier, but some fields have remained too wet, and heavy rainfall this past Wednesday and Thursday has now added to planting woes. It does appear that several days of dry weather will follow this weekend into next week, so planting should gradually resume. But the slow pace of planting in Argentina this year is a consideration when tracking crop progress as we go through the season. To the north, across South Brazil and Paraguay, the weather has turned extremely dry this month after heavy rainfall in October. This dryness is now of concern for the development of corn and soybeans. A round of showers and thunderstorms is now coming through with rainfall of 3/4 of an inch to 1.5 inches likely. However, this rain will not fully alleviate the dryness as rainfall deficits for the month are now approaching 4 to 5 inches. Additional scattered showers and thunderstorms are possible next week around Tuesday, but a trend of drier weather is likely next week. The need for additional rainfall across South Brazil and Paraguay will likely persist. Finally, conditions are better for crop production farther north across center-west into southeast Brazil as the rainy season is now in full swing. Scattered thunderstorms will continue on a daily basis, so most locations from Mato Grosso eastward will receive timely rainfall over at least the next couple of weeks. That is your South American weather update. For Commodity Week, I'm meteorologist Ed Kieser.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded on the 21st day of November, a Wednesday. In studio with us, our panelists, Bill Gentry, Bill Mayer, and Jackie Vakes. On the phone line, Lockie Stevens from Lockstock Consulting. He's in Victoria, Australia. Thank you so much for taking the time with us. First, why don't you tell us where exactly you're located and what that means in terms of the wheat belts in Australia, Lockie.
Hi, Todd. Thanks, firstly, for having me on. I enjoy listening to your show each morning on the way into work and getting an understanding of what's happened in the U.S. market, so thank you very much.
You're welcome.
We're based in southeastern Australia, just south of Melbourne, in a town called Geelong, and that's probably in the southeastern part of the wheat belt, with the majority of the wheat, or a large portion of the wheat, growing through the eastern states, but also obviously a lot through Western Australia, which is a long way across the other side of the country. So we're tucked down in the southeast here.
The numbers that we have seen on the Australian wheat crop don't look particularly good this year. Can you expand upon that?
Yeah, I mean, we're looking at a national wheat production of about 20.5 million tonnes, which is only a little bit below an average crop. We have 21-22, but well down on last year where we nearly hit a record 30 million tonnes and 28 the year before. So, you know, we're back about, from that record number, we're back, what's that, about 30%, I suppose, from last year. But we're still well above some of the drought years. You know, in the last 10 years, we've had three crops that have been between 10 and 13 million tonnes, so 50% of average, and that's a disaster. This year's not so bad. It's just under average. I guess the disappointment has been that the crop was set up for another above average near record, and we just didn't get a lot of spring rainfall, which is really critical for our crops down here in Australia.
You know, Lockie, in reading some of the information that you sent ahead, you said South Korea, China, Philippines, Vietnam, Thailand are the primary people that Australia sells wheat to. How are your exports affected by the exchange rate, and what exchange rate affects you the most?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a U.S. dollar. Aussie dollar is the exchange rate that we follow a lot. The main issue is global wheat prices are generally U.S. dollar commodity-driven, so our price back to the farmer is the one that gets affected. So in a high Aussie dollar environment like we are today, where our Aussie dollar is above parity to the U.S., years gone by, and we've seen it at 50 cents and 60 cents. So it's a big difference for our local farmers, where the high US dollar commodity prices around the world at the moment not necessarily translating to record prices in Australia, but still very good and still above what they need to be. So they're making money today. In terms of the export markets, the main markets, we have a lot of inelastic type demand into Japan and Indonesia and those types of areas. Where we're seeing a bit of a change this year is from last is we had a lot of lower quality wheat last year. We had corn situation in the US, obviously, where they were rationing a lot of export demand and a corn wheat spread that was really narrow. So that allowed us to export a record 24, 25 million tonnes of that record 30 million tonne crop. And this year we're going to probably bring that back to 17 or 18. And a lot of that difference is being lost to the more lower quality feed type markets. South Korea took 2.5 million tonnes from us last year. China took a similar amount. We're expecting probably a quarter of that demand this year to come from those two big destinations in particular.
Jackie's question on the exchange rate, and that kind of leads right into my question here. I noticed putting some stuff together for this afternoon. Your acreage or hectares that you plant seem to be real steady over the years, not a lot of change really up or down. Is it a profitable level that the farmers are at, and is there additional ground that could go into wheat production if things were more profitable?
Bill, Australia's, I guess, pretty well developed agriculturally, so I don't think from an arable point of view, we're tucked around the coastal or just inside the mountain ranges is where our rainfall is, and we're talking sort of 20-inch to even down to 10-inch annual in-crop grain rainfall for a lot of these guys. So we just don't have, we've got a lot of country, but a lot of it doesn't get wet at the right time, so we just can't produce a lot more than that. Wheat is our main staple. We don't have enough rain and too much heat to grow things like corn, so it's basically wheat or nothing. I mean, the other options in the rotation are barley and canola, but they're significantly less. You know, a barley production of 8 million tonnes and a canola crop of 2 million are our next in charge, so wheat's by far the most dominant. So going forward, even with higher prices, we may not get a significant improvement in area, but we may see some improvements in yield and more encouragement of using fertiliser and other technologies. In terms of where the prices are today, farmers' ex-farm prices are around about $250 for wheat and $200 for barley. If you're above $180 to $200 ex-farm, you're generally making okay money, or at least paying the bills. So they're happy at the moment.
This week we saw India basically exporting some level 4 milling wheat. Around here we're not really in tune with the different levels and the food quality, but in your area we've seen, you know, really good wheat come off some years, or if the weather hits at a wrong time you see a lot of feed wheat come off. How do you see with the El Nino La Nina situation playing out as it is the second half of your production season?
Yeah, so we're just harvesting now, so in another month our crop will be pretty much in the bin. Because of the tighter finish and a couple of wet years, we think there's been a lot of nitrogen leaching in our soils, and it didn't get too hot either this year. It was dry, but it didn't get too hot, so our protein's going to be down. We're seeing a lot of ASW to AP, which is 9.5% to 11% protein range. We're expecting a larger than normal amount of wheat in that range, whereas in other years, especially in northern Queensland, southern Queensland and northern New South Wales, where the soils and the temperatures get up, they can produce consistently 12 to 14% pro. This year, there's been very little of that. And in years gone by, when it's got really wet, they've had to feed. But generally, where an APW or, say, let's call it a 10 to 12% protein crop, this year we're probably down 1 or 2% on that. And that's going to mean we have to readjust where we send it to.
I'm going to venture out outside just a bit here. One of the wild relatives of the soybean it was found in Australia and brought back to the United States, and it's been worked into our soybean hybrids here. I'm wondering whether you think there is a possibility that as a vegetable oil, soybeans could be developed more strongly there if there was a better world market.
In terms of growing soybeans in Australia?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, we'd love to be able to grow corn and soybeans, but as I say, our rainfall is just not big enough and we get too hot, so they really struggle. We've got, to put in perspective, maybe 50,000 hectares of soybeans gets grown and a similar level of corn, so it's just we just can't quite get it in the right spots. Unless we can find, through GM or other methods, a drought-type tolerant or low moisture corn or bean, then it's going to really struggle to grow in Australia.
And I probably knew the answer to that question. And for clarification, those relatives came from the rainforest areas in the far northern reaches of Australia.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Yeah, so up in there, there's been a lot of schemes tried to grow in certain areas, but we just really haven't been able to get it. Australian labour costs are really high, and we're not able to... environmentally, we're not able to, and I don't think anyone wants to, is go through the process of clearing land and so on, what other countries have. But, yeah, so unfortunately, I think we're going to probably struggle in the next 5 to 10 years anyway to find something sustainable in those areas.
One of the things that I wanted to ask you was, here we're sitting here, and it's 4:45 or 4:50, and it is 10:50 down by you. How do you handle the trading and the difference in time?
Yeah, well, I guess I focus mostly on our Australian market here. So when our farmers and our consumers are out and buying, and we're also lucky that we're in the Asian time zone as well, so there's a lot of trade happening. And until the 24-hour or 20-hour or 22-hour trading or whatever we're up to now has been helpful, but even before we saw a really strong increase in liquidity in what we called the Project A or the overnight market when it came on, and that really helped us give a good understanding of what's going on. If people needed to move big positions, AWB back in the day, they had offices in Geneva and in Portland and those sorts of places where they could get that done. And a lot of the bigger multinationals have got offices and hedge desks around the world to monitor those things at night too. But during our time zone for our cash markets, it's fine.
Lockie, thank you so much for taking the time with us today. And we do really appreciate what you're doing there in Australia and that you listen to our programs, too.
Well, thank you very much for your time, and we look with interest to see how the dry weather in the U.S. pans out and how much wheat they're going to keep feeding over there. So good luck with it, and have a great Thanksgiving with your families and friends.
Hey, thank you so much. Lockie Stevens is with Lockstock Consulting. He's in Victoria, Australia. A quick word from our panelist in studio to close up the program, Bill Gentry.
I just hope everybody has a good Thanksgiving, and we'll come back on Friday, watch option expiration, and see if something good happens.
Bill Mayer?
I think see if the trade starts to pay attention to the dryness out west. The drought hasn't gone away completely, and I think that may be something that creeps back up here soon.
And Jackie Vakes.
Yep, and thanks to all of you for listening for us. Have a great holiday.
That wraps up this edition of Commodity Week. Again, thanks to Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson, Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing, and Bill Gentry of Risk Management Commodities. And do have a great Thanksgiving holiday. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.